What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to the Shinigami Love Apples podcast, episode 9. I'm Shinigami Pinpin, and as always, I'm joined across from me with Shinigami Yu-Yu. Conjections? What the fuck? Hey, we're just going to go back to the intro. We're going to do it all.
I mean, that was a good intro.
Okay, anyway. Anyway, welcome back to episode 9. And yeah, we've got a bit. We were joking earlier because we feel like this is kind of going to be a filler episode. Uh-huh. And I like how I've led with that. So now Everyone just.
Way to set expectations immediately. Oh, great. It's filler. I guess we'll just skip this one.
We've somehow completely just chat all over the future podcast by saying you can tune out now and come back next week. And you really.
I mean, I'm going to be yelling later. So how filler is it?
I mean, honestly, most of our highlights are you yelling in some form. So I feel like we're going to have a good start.
Par for the course, as they say.
Anyway, how was your week?
It's really good. I'm going to open my coffee first because I need sustenance.
Oh, yeah. Double.
Oh.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Did you hear the ping on that? It's like a fucking sonar. Just
It's because I like flicked it.
Yes, as always.
That's the indication of how my week went.
Okay. Oh, God, I'm coughing again. I'm sorry. Allergies, but I'm not sniffling this time.
Oh.
I'm not going to lie. I know you pretty well. We've known you for a long time, and I can't tell if you popping a coffee open is a good week or a bad week. Although the fact you had to start immediately makes me wonder.
Right. Yeah. It was a bad week. Well, I say that. It was more for comedic relief. It actually was just okay. It was normal. Okay. Actually, now that I think about it, I had a pretty good week. I'm just tired.
By the time we get done with this, it's going to be a fucking fantastic week. Best week you've ever had. Why
if I really sit down and I analyze it on any deep meaning.
Well, obviously, we were joking that, well, not joking, we were talking about when we were at our anime shop earlier, that your employer decided to... As they do.
Money. Am I right?
Well, it's
who needs it? I certainly don't. I don't work 12-hour days just because for
funsies. For fun.
Or maybe wait, I do. I do work 12-hour days just for fun.
It's interesting. Again, for those of you listening, we don't really talk. I will talk about the job I'm at now.
Yeah.
When I leave it, because there's a very high chance I'm leaving it soon enough to I'll finally be able to open up about it and be like,
yay.
And I'm not going to be burning any bridges because I'm not going to be saying anything shitty about them. I'm just going to be like, hey, if you've ever wondered, this is a thing.
You'll be
right?
able to relate certain things to your experiences without doxing yourself because you'll be post-dox.
Yeah, the employer I work for now is so recognizable that if I start telling you how an average day
goes. I'm sure if somebody guessed, they'd probably.
I mean, it doesn't take a genius. Yeah. Like, I've described stuff in the past that's kind of like, okay, I wonder.
Yeah.
There's only a very narrow range of possibilities given what I've described, I do. But for me, I'm currently waiting for a potential transfer to a more opportunistic job. And then Yu-Yu's employer decided to forget to give him a promised raise. So as far as work weeks go, polar opposites, but also.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking is like my work week was not good, but my week as a whole
was good.
Was actually pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's pretty common for both of us, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah, this week, nothing to really backpedal on. We've been pretty good about forgetting not to talk about shit. Hey guys, I promised you we were going to do this. And then it's like, oops. But also, if you haven't written into us and been like, yo, you stupid fucks, you forgot to talk about this. Well, that's on you, the listener. So I'm going to blame you for a minute. And you can stop accepting this blame by writing in to shinigamiloveapples.podcast@gmail.com. Send your love mail, your hate mail, or your free hentai. And we will distribute it.
Yeah.
to those who come to our door. Searching for such things. We'll talk about that later.
But
we promise to get your art the exposure it deserves. Anyway, this week in anime. So this is, man, I am rolling perfect tens for anime the past 3 weeks. And I don't know what I did to deserve it, but I feel like it's almost like gacha where I feel like I've used up all my luck. this past 3 weeks on quality anime, and I feel like I'm just going to watch trash for the rest of the year because somehow, some way, there's no way I should be getting this many good series back to back. excuse me. But this week, two days ago, honestly, I started the Apothecary Diaries.
Yeah.
And holy fuck, every ounce of hype. Actually, I don't. I see a lot of hype for it from people who have seen it, but overall, I don't see a lot of press for it.
No, yeah, I don't think anybody talked about it, but I, recently, even though this came out last year, was it the end of last year or was it like mid last year? I feel like it's been out for a little bit. It's still new.
I will get an answer to that question.
But it's a little, I feel like it's been out for a little bit. I'm only just now seeing people go like, hey, we kind of forgot to talk about this, but this is actually a great show.
Yeah, it's... Man, I'm having to clear my throat all the time now. It's just one of those days, I guess. Yeah, so it came out, it says fall 2023, well, like specifically went. Oh, okay, October 22nd, and it just finished. No, it's due to finish airing next week. Ooh, wow, I'm getting caught up in a good time.
So it is still airing, I guess.
Yeah, it's a faller.
I thought it had been done for a little bit.
No, it's a faller winter offering. They did split the first season into like two halves.
Crunchyroll, that must be what I was thinking of.
Crunchyroll didn't separate them, but they did take a week breather and a small recap in between. It is fantastic. Now, I'm a sucker. I'm an absolute sucker for like pre-modern Asia in general, whether it be pre-modern Japan, kind of like it's featured in Demon Slayer.
Yeah.
Like Edo period, pre-modern China. And I'm especially fascinated with these eras because they're viewed a little less cynically without politics.
Yeah.
Which is something that drives me nuts. Like China has this incredibly deep culture that I haven't studied as much as Japanese, but I'm still fascinated by it. In fact, I remember as a kid watching, I can't remember what it was called. I watched this show with this Chinese Siamese cat. It was on PBS. I can't remember its name. If you remember what it is, write into me or hit us up on Threads. I could Google it, I guess. But it's more fun to have someone else do the work for me.
Wow.
But there was this kids show on PBS that was this Chinese Siamese cat.
And
Sagawa. Sagawa.
I never watched it.
It was really, really good because it was just ancient. It was pre-modern China. And most of my favorite like folk music comes from pre-modern Japan, pre-modern China. I just love that era. There's just something, I don't know, it's fascinating. When you consider a culture as old as China's and Japan's and Korea's, their cultures are truly ancient, you know, tens of thousands of years of recorded history. And they've evolved like really vividly. It's really cool. But me being born to a country with like no history whatsoever, like 200, 300 years, you know, topping out at 400 coming up.
Right.
There's not a lot going
on
there.
We threw some tea
into the harbor.
In the harbor, and then we enslaved black people. And then.
Yep. And then we shot each other about that issue.
Fought each other.
and then when we were done shooting each other, we went, you know, we should probably stop doing that.
Yeah.
But then and we didn't stop doing that because we're still racist even to this day.
And then we bullied the rest of the world.
Yes. We were colonial England without England. we didn't settle colonies. We just held guns to their head and said, you will appreciate.
It's kind of ironic that we were like, we hate you, motherland. We need to separate. And then the second we separated, we were like, we could do it better.
The apprentice has
you
become
fools.
The master. Yes, absolutely. I don't know. I just love ancient China. And I got totally sidetracked there. But... the Apothecary Diaries occurs in ancient. I keep saying that and it is wrong. It occurs in pre-modern China. And I don't know. It just, you don't have any of the sort of story writing cheats you get when you live in a digital era. When you have an anime set in the modern world, there's so many corners you can cut because of the real world being so convenient.
Yeah.
You can't explain that stuff away. And the thing about the Apothecary Diaries is, to summarize the basic story for those of you who are listening who might be interested in watching, it's about a girl who gets kidnapped from her village outside of the Chinese emperor's palace and gets assigned to work for him in the palace. But instead of working for him directly, she works in what's called the rear palace, which for those of you who've studied your Chinese or Japanese history, you may be aware that these are essentially glorified brothels. There's no other way to really put it. This is where emperor's concubines and sort of romantic partners lived to provide great children for the lineage, yeah. that sort of thing. And she ends up working in that role where she has to work in supporting these concubines and these other, for lack of better words, these prostitutes mm-hmm. designed to support the emperor. And but her main skill set, and from where the anime gets its title, is she's an apothecary. Mm-hmm. She knows drugs and poisons and herbs and all this stuff, and yeah. she knows her way around them. And the rest of these folks in the rear palace aren't that particularly. Are they're educated in other ways? They're not yeah. educated in the sciences. Hmm. So she really stands out. This servant girl that just really knows. Yeah. Medical science.
Interesting.
It's really good.
There's a movie that we should all watch together called Rise of the Red Lantern.
Okay.
It is an incredible, incredible Chinese film about a girl that sells herself to, like, as a concubine mm. because mm-hmm. her father dies and she needs to pay back debts. And
yep. That was
it's similar, yep. similar thing where, like, she's really cunning and smart and figures certain things out. About the movie, I'm not gonna like spoil anything, but like yeah. it's a compelling movie, and I think if you like this, it sounds similar enough. I think
I'd
really like that one too.
The other thing that I just finished watching, I just finished season 2 of Classroom of the Elite. I've stopped because I want to watch 3 mm-hmm. with you because I've been told 3 is kind of the mic drop for the series thus far, and I don't want to get into that without live reaction.
Right.
But Classroom of the Elite again has also been just absolutely fantastic, and Classroom of the Elite is my first 10 in a while.
Yeah.
I think Spy Family was my last, and I think Spy mm-hmm. Family gets away a little bit with a 10 because it's cute.
Yeah.
I think Spy Family deserves a 9, but I give it mm-hmm. a 10 because it's a cute puppy. Even if it's kind of retarded, like, sometimes it's just like, oh. Yeah.
It's also a unique story that we haven't had in a while.
Yeah, it's different. But it's the same for, like, Classroom of the Elite has done a remarkable job keeping my attention, and that, for me, Mr. ADHD, that's like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right, how about you for anime this week?
I'm just going to give a little sneak peek into my oldies with moldies, because I'm cheating. Technically, oldies with moldies are things that we had finished that we're reviewing.
Right.
Like, that we finished a while ago that we're reviewing now. I'm cheating because this one came out in 2010, so, like, it technically is an oldie with moly. I just finished it though, but God,
you've got things shit, to say about it,
bro. Yeah, it's covered in mold. That's how that's how I'm justifying it.
It's we'll not talk very about old, that. But it's already got mold. Yeah, yeah.
We'll talk about that in a little bit. The other thing is Dr. Stone. You and I have been finished. This is the current season that we're watching.
Current, yeah, or just finished.
The one that just finished. Just finished. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good. The first season of Dr. Stone, I was in love with because it was just fun. Again, a unique concept.
It was new, yeah.
Totally new thing. Lots of science. You and I are both science nerds. So it was like really cool to see real science being applied to like a fantasy setting.
Yeah.
Kind of. It's science fantasy, science fiction almost.
You could almost call it an isekai exclusively because they've been teleported to another world, but they never physically teleported. They just fast forwarded through time, I guess.
Yeah. Which was really cool. And then it started to like kind of wear on me a little bit of like every single time there was any conflict, it was like, I immediately have the answer. I've been thinking about this. It's here to go. Everything's resolved.
Yeah, because of science. Yeah.
Yeah, because of science. But also like every time the bad guy would meet with them, they would immediately forget their morals or like whatever like new morals that they had set aside to like, join the kingdom of science. And it's like, I was kind of getting bored with it. New season. they decided to go, okay, enough of the kid shit. Okay.
Well, and that's, this is a thing I wish more anime did in general is every now and then I'm okay with you. I know it's a TV show. Feel free to pull the kid gloves off.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of this, to be fair, is driven by the manga, which I haven't read. Yeah. I really want to now because this looks like something I would really like to expound on over many more hours of content.
Yeah.
But just knowing what I know about the manga, it wasn't super, dark.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice that we're starting to get a little bit of an edge to the knife where it's like, ooh, all right, Senku's not all he's cracked up to be.
Right.
He doesn't have answers to everything.
Yeah. And just seeing that we now have this like dark evil force that is like,
which we still don't know, clearly
a real enemy and is like very effective. Not just like we're having quarrels because other guy has slightly different morals than me. This is like oh shit, we actually met more than our match at this point.
Well, it's also interesting because if you theorize at all, and spoilers for those of you who haven't watched the series, but if you theorize at all, they've met someone who can return them to where they began.
Yeah.
And that's what's terrifying about it, is just that sort of...
And not just return them, immediately.
Yeah.
Return them.
Yeah. As they already have done to part of their team in the episode we just watched. Yeah. Yeah. So that gives... For those of you who have seen it, you can probably puzzle out where we are in season 3. On to music. I want to talk really quick about the artist Otto. She's a pretty famous live pop/rock singer, Japanese pop rock singer. And she's outstanding. I love all of her stuff. She's known for the most recent One Piece Red's musical opener. And she's absolutely fantastic. But the reason I brought her up here is just kind of a fascinating... Her shtick for live gigs is that she always performs as either a silhouette or kind of in the background. She doesn't perform as a face character.
Yeah. She's also a faceless singer, essentially. Yeah. Yeah.
But she also doesn't have a VTuber, or not VTuber, wrong word, virtual performer.
Right.
She's just, I think, no one knows.
Well, all of her music videos is just like the character of the anime that happens to be part of whatever opener she made usually sings it. Yeah.
But she doesn't make them perform. Like she doesn't go to the gig and you've got a Vocaloid sort of thing. But anyway, the reason I kind of bring this up is I saw this fascinating thing where I guess her staff had to have a serious discussion about the future of her performing that way because they went to the Netherlands. And I guess for whatever reason, I'm sorry, I just inappropriately slandered a country, Belgium. I apologize. I said Netherlands and my brain went, you dumbass, that's not in Belgium. Yeah. they went to Belgium and I guess... a group of fans, I hate calling people like that fans, but a group of attendees decided to bring flashlights and video cameras and try to reveal reveal her.
Yeah. Which is also kind of funny because even if you did manage to light her enough to get some semblance, she's going to be moving around and also she's just going to look like, okay, let's be real. She's a Japanese woman. She's going to look like a Japanese
woman. She's a pop artist. Yeah.
But not going to get anything crazy.
But if you want to get even more conspiratorial about it, is it even her? It could be a lip syncing performer. And like,
think about, what's her name? The French duo, electronic duo.
Oh, Daft Punk.
Daft Punk.
Yeah.
They didn't perform anything.
No.
they paid people to go on stage for them so they could just
and wear the heads. So they, So, I mean, I don't understand why they try to do that. Yeah. But I think the whole shtick for Otto's live performance is the fact that she has this mystique of you will never quite know who she is. Mm-hmm. And I love that about her. And I think it's the reason why she's become the face of so many anime's musical artists. Like, she's Uta in One Piece. And she's been a musical character in a ton of other anime. So I really like that. So I hope fans will chill the fuck out and stop trying to ruin the magic.
Yeah. It's kind of the downfall of just like being a faceless or like, what's the word?
Or like, mysterious
sort of.
Yeah.
Cause like,
anonymous essentially. Yeah.
Cause like, God, I'm blanking on everybody's names today. Hold on. Give me half a second here. I will pull up their name. They're a band. Sleep Token.
Oh, Sleep Token. Yeah.
Right. That was another recent one where they are characters within a story. They are not real people. And every single person was like, we need to figure out who these fucking people are.
Yeah.
Or like Clowncore. Again, they're entities a part of a story and everybody was immediately like, oh, we need to figure out who they are.
Which of course they ended up figuring out because it didn't take
it wasn't too hard.
Yeah. the musical style there was kind of obvious, but,
that just seems to be the par for the course. It seems like is like,
why? It's I don't more want fun you to not know.
Yeah. I don't want you to know who I am. So everybody figures out who I am. It's like, relax,
just chill, enjoy the music, have a good time.
Yeah.
So, on to video games, and guess what, guys? Genshin again. Honestly, HoYoverse, if you're listening, please just bring us on board. We promise we'll do you justice. no, we are definitely sellouts for Genshin, and what do we got this week?
I wanted to talk about the new event, which you haven't done yet.
I've not, but spoil it anyway. I don't care.
Well, I mean, you already kind of know how it goes. It's not like there's nothing really crazy about it, but it's super, super fun, and there's actually like a lot of rewards that come along with it, which is kind of exciting to see. But this one is essentially, I guess there's a little bit of story of it. It's not that crazy, but Lisa is really busy working on a new potion. Okay. And you go see her, and then she goes, "Oh, I'm going to give you all my work so I don't have to do anything."
Very, very much yeah. like her. Yeah. Okay.
And so you end up managing a potion shop, essentially. Oh. You create potions, and it's a puzzle game. So you have to like fit puzzle pieces into a square.
Okay.
And the more complicated thing, like the more you level up, the more complicated, like the more square chances yeah. and different pieces and stuff. And depending on, and each puzzle piece has a set like
elements or something, or
no, like some of them are endurance or relaxation, fragrance,
like attributes.
Attributes, okay, yeah. So they have like sub attributes, and then also the main attribute, which is like HP, endurance,
okay,
and
so
health.
There was
whatever.
There was a game. Everything. So you're solving these puzzles to create each potion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So you have to. Not only do you have this, there's no set puzzle to solve. Oh. You are creating your potion with what substats you want with puzzle pieces, and you have to try and fit as many puzzle pieces into it while creating
maximize.
Yeah, okay. You have to maximize it. So it has like a bar. So you get to 100%, but then you could go up to 170%, I think, which is nice. Like making like the really nice potions. But it's all like how well can you fit these pieces into your set squares. And then there's also like squares you can't actually access.
Okay.
And that changes every single time. So it's like, you can't just go like, I'm going to do this every time. You have to like actually sit there and think about what you want to do
yeah.
every single time
now,
you make
a potion. In addition to the puzzling side, this is also a management sim sort mm-hmm. of thing, right?
Yeah. So you get, so after you create the potion, you can go like put it on your shelves to sell. And then once you sell, you get feedback from the community going, so you'll get like a news report. It's like a, like Paimon, like, cuts out the news
oh,
and gives you a report, and you'll say like, so and so was talking about how they needed to go up to Dragon's Spine and to collect
so
whatever.
You're gonna need warming,
and so you need
or
a
whatever.
Warm
yeah.
endurance type potion, which would sell a lot better than having like a cooling, okay. chilling, relaxing potion. And there's a whole thing. Plus, you also have to grow your flowers and or your like
oh, your ingredients. Yeah.
So you have to make sure that you're growing enough of the ingredients that you need. Pay attention to the needs of the people. And creating the best potion that you can create. But that's not all. Because on top of all of that, some of the characters will come to your shop and request a new potion.
Okay.
It's like specifically for them. So like at the beginning, you meet up with Beto and she has a specific request. And you have to make a potion specifically for her.
Imagining Beto and Mondstadt is already making me giggle because I've never seen her in Mondstadt. I'm yeah. just like, what the hell are you doing down
yeah.
here, Captain?
There's a whole story piece as to why she's there. But yeah, it's really fun, and there's a lot to think about. It seems when I first went in there, I was like, oh, this will be a fun little thing. I'll hit a couple buttons, and then I'll put it up for sale, and I'll be done. No, this shit took me a couple hours. It's really, really in depth.
That and this kind of excites me because when I played Yakuza 0, one of the things I loved the most about it was the fucking Hostess Club
<Yeah.
laughs> minigame, which stopped being a minigame for me and just became the only game. Thing I did in Yakuza yeah. for the next 2 months. And I actually, when I finally maxed out my Hostess Club, I actually quit playing Yakuza yeah. 0. It had completely derailed yeah. all of my joy for Yakuza. All I wanted to do was run a host club, and I went or Hostess yeah. Club, and that was it.
Yeah, it's really fun. I would love it if they added this as more of a
I was just going to say.
Kind of like the TCG that they have. Like mm-hmm. I would love to have the management or the pot. The
teapot. Yeah.
Something like that. I would love it if they added this.
Yeah, it'd be nice. I think that's why they were querying
right,
when they sent out the surveys.
It, yeah.
Yeah, I think they were mm-hmm. asking gamers if they wanted to see stuff on a more like permanent basis.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, here's hoping. It looks like fun, and I'll try it, and I'll give some like mm-hmm. feedback on it next week. For Genshin, for me this week, I finally finished Inazuma.
Yay.
So Yu is vastly ahead of me in story.
Yeah, I'm halfway through Sumeru.
Because I am... Let me put it this way. When I played Stray, the cat post-apocalypse game.
Yeah.
Apparently, the developers are like, this is a two-hour game.
Right.
Or, like, 2-3 hour game. Mm-hmm. I played my first playthrough for 12 hours.
Yeah.
Because I spent so much time taking in the world, the environment, the music, mm-hmm. the characters, making sure I hit every fucking line of dialogue with every character,
yep.
and collecting every memory. And I had a great time, but I got to the end and I went, and the game teased me like, it took you 12 hours to do a two-hour game. And I was like,
yeah,
oh shit. Okay. I guess I'm really slow, yeah. But I'm not a completionist though. That's what's interesting is when it comes to video games, I'm not a completionist. I'm not one of those people who achievement hunts or insists on 100%ing everything.
Yeah.
But when it comes to a story specifically, I insist that I have all the details so that way I feel like I'm invested.
Yeah, you're trying to get the full brevity of like what you're doing.
Well, like for Inazuma and potential story spoilers if you're new to Genshin, the thing at Inazuma for me was each island, because of how the whole insurgency against the Vision Hunt decree went, every island had its own shtick for what it was doing and why it was doing it.
Yeah.
And for me, the story kind of, the main Archon quests burned through the islands. Just ping, 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 done. And you were over to Kokonomiya's whatever island she's on that I don't remember the name of. You were on that island and then it's just like, oh, and down there's Ekonomiya. And it's just, it introduced areas so quickly. And I went, oh my God, there's so many side characters I'm passing by while I did this. Or like the biggest one for me early on was the Tataragimi or Tataragami. Yeah. It's like, there's literally a fucking nuclear power plant over here off the rails, which, by the way, is a distinct poke. Uh-huh. If you play, you haven't played it, have you?
I kind of started most of the quests, but
when you finish it, you'll notice it is a distinct poke at Fukushima Daiichi power plant.
Yeah.
It is literally, you get to the end and there are people commenting that they are moving back despite the ongoing decontamination efforts because they are partial to where they lived and they want to go back to their hometown, which is exact quotes from a lot of the Japanese who were displaced from Fukushima. So I just found it interesting. I was like, this is, but without that, that side quest for me, that island had no value. I just went right through it and I was gone. I was like, oh
yeah,
I guess it doesn't fucking matter.
Right.
We're going to have a battle right in front of it and we're fighting next to a nuclear fucking generator, but no big deal. It's okay. We're just going to go right by that. So I had to play every story and side quest, which I did. Mm-hmm. And I have finally finished 100% of non-world story and side quests up to Inazuma. Although now I'm told I'm not correct about that because apparently there's a part. Well, I guess all of the areas technically have their part too.
Well, you haven't done Ekonomiya yet.
No,
right.
Which I do need to go down to. And is that a part of the main quest or is that a side quest?
It's a side quest.
Yeah. I did start it. They told me how to go to the five places and unlock.
Yeah,
unlock the area, which I will probably be doing today or tomorrow or whatever. But yeah, so I'm finally catching up to that. And by the time I catch up to that and do Ekonomiya, you'll be in fucking Fontaine.
Fontaine. Yeah. yeah. Well, because I have a slightly different approach in that I want to get to the end content of like the main story and stuff sooner than later, because whenever there's new events or new little like side things or whatever, you end up getting a lot of spoiled content, or you just don't do the event stuff. And I feel like that's a huge waste of free items and just like little fun one-off things. And so I'm trying to get to the end first, and then I'll circle back and I'll clean up the missing pieces.
That's pretty smart, considering when we had
Lantern Rite.
It was right before Lantern Rite.
But it was all
when they released Shen Yun
together.
But with Shen Yun, they were like, oh, we're going to introduce all these characters that relate to the Adepti. And I had never met them. I had never even, when I first did that quest, I hadn't even met Kei Ching yet.
Yeah.
And I was like, the Xing Shu? Who are the Xing Shu? Who the fuck are these spec ops?
Right.
Fucks.
Yeah.
And then and the game was like, sorry, that's a spoiler because you haven't played this yet. So to be fair, I completely see your perspective, and I'm probably going to be a little faster in my quests in the future.
Yeah.
But I also don't know, and I don't know if anyone could ever confirm this or deny it for me. I'm concerned about quests locking away if you pass them. So if there's a quest related to, I don't know, Yoimiya on Inazuma.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of her quest is tied to the Archon line, so that if you blow past them, I wonder if you can even go back, or do the developers go, well, we should probably make sure the content's available all the time.
Yeah,
I don't have an answer to that. I'm curious.
I think that's
my main paranoia is, what if there's a character whose relationship with you and the relationship with the other characters hinges on where you are? Yeah. Because when you get the arrest warrant issued for you, for fighting the Raiden Shogun.
Yeah.
Every single character and every single side quest comments on it. Mm-hmm. So either they coded that into blanket all quests, or the quests were tweaked specifically for where I was.
Yeah.
And that makes me nervous because I'm like, uh-oh, I hope I didn't miss anything because I should have done a little bit more digging while I was under the arrest warrant, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem to be that way with future. Like, whenever you do a quest out of order or, like, one of the event things or something, sometimes they'll just assume you know what happened.
That's true.
So I almost feel like they wouldn't do that, but I nope. don't know.
Hopefully not.
Yeah.
All right. On to, well, we're going to throw a little special something into the pop culture section. And
yeah, books.
I know we don't talk about manga and books that often because it is the most expensive form of content we could indulge in. And we're just not financially to the point where we can be buying manga every fucking week.
Yeah.
At least affordably.
Yeah. But no, I on a whim started reading a book, and it is the best book I've ever written. I wish I wrote it.
Way to take credit for Mr. Murakami. Wow.
It's the best book I've read, at least to this point. It's called Norwegian Wood by Murakami. Dude, it is fantastic. It's the only book that I've read so far in my lifetime, which, to be fair, I'm not a big reader.
Right.
But this is the only book that I've actually felt like an out of body experience, getting sucked out of my own body and plopped straight into their story.
Yeah.
Completely lost in everything. And just the way he words things, the way he talks about things is it's super dry, but it's also very funny and like quick about everything. But he also sets things up so nicely. Like,
so he's not very flowery. He's very like to it. Or is he sort of?
Sometimes he'll be flowery about certain things when he feels it needs extra explanation because it's important to the story. If it's not important to the story, he does not sit there and use his max vocabulary to describe something that doesn't matter. But it's just all like it's very interesting because you're right. It is fiction, but he's writing it as if it's a memoir. Mm. So you're reading the like host voice. Or like the narrated voice, I should say, as him in his 30s remembering the past, and it jumps around a bunch. So you learn about a character, Naoka, and you talk about, or sorry, Naoko, and he talks about her in a certain way to where it leaves a lot of mystery, but you make some assumptions,
right?
And then you immediately fast forward / go back in time.
It's hard to tell, yeah.
Yeah. To like the next memory about him being in college and just getting a new friend and learning how to survive in college to then re-meeting her in the future and starting to go through and gives you more little tidbits into who she is. But the thing is like, I don't even know how to explain without spoiling, and I really want you to read it, so I almost don't want to like.
Yeah, I'll read it.
It's so good. But like, the best way I could say it is, he damn right like forces you to believe A.
Okay.
Then he'll like sprinkle a little B in there, and then he'll fucking hit you with C, and you're like, holy shit, I didn't see that coming. Okay, now I understand things completely. I just spent like 3 hours reading this, assuming that we're in A, maybe possibly in B, and now I realize we're in C. Which just kind of excites me because I'm like, are we actually in C? I don't know. Yeah. We might be in D or F at this point.
So he's a good expectation subverter.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, yeah, see, I like writing like that.
It is so good. I don't even... I'm too early into it. I'm only 3 chapters in.
And what would the name of this book that you've been describing for the last 5 minutes happen to be?
I talked about it. Norwegian Wood.
Did you say... Oh, I didn't hear you say... I'm over here like, oh, he didn't mention the name of that. Because I literally put my cursor and highlighted it because I was like, no, I haven't heard him say it.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, I highlighted
it. To be fair, I'll say it again. Norwegian Wood. It is,
I'll
great.
Go get some.
Oh. Also, I kind of want to talk about how I found this book because.
Yeah, how the fuck did you. It seems like something that wouldn't land on your radar normally. Yeah,
no, it wouldn't have. I was watching a video about Miyazaki.
Oh,
Studio Ghibli Miyazaki, Hayao Miyazaki. And it was I don't remember the name of the YouTuber, and something, Joanne Taylor or something like that. I don't know. She was doing like his daily creative routine and kind of talking about it and trying to like implement it a little bit more into her life. But she was just talking about him and her, like how she finds him really inspirational. She went to Japan to teach for a year, mm-hmm. wrote a book about her experiences in Japan. And she was like talking about how one of the things that Miyazaki always does is radio calisthenics. Him and his whole crew every morning will do calisthenics together. And she just kind of randomly was just like, oh, there's this book called Norwegian Wood. I'm pretty sure they do that in that book. And then that was it.
That was it. No, but that was enough to make you go, well, I should probably look that up.
Well, I really liked her and her style of like video and the way she was talking about it and everything. And I thought, like, if we both find Miyazaki inspirational, and she's also an author, and she recommended a book. She didn't even recommend it. She just casually pulled it up. But it's also such a small thing. Like, the book is not about radio calisthenics. The calisthenic portion actually is only like 2 pages long.
Aww.
Yeah, I know. but that's, yeah, it just, the way she kind of just like flippantly was like, oh, I think this book had that. I was like, well, I should read the book.
That's
how I discovered it.
Now, you discovered something else recently that you're a little bit less proud of.
I was really happy with life. I was ready to move on to,
the things you think are fucking dumb. Yeah. Well, unfortunately for you, you're gonna have to talk about at least one thing you think is fucking dumb. And
I'm actually kind of excited to talk about it.
Okay, go ahead.
I found the worst TV show of all time.
Wow. Unhinged. Okay.
Here's the thing. Okay, so it's called B Gata HK, or the English version, Yamada's First Time.
Now, I want to point out real quick before he reviews this, I don't know what it is, and I refused to spoil it for myself. So the only thing I know, because I couldn't avoid it when I got the picture, was apparently it's an ecchi anime. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. Somehow this has a 6.85 on my anime list.
It's not...
I think people accidentally clicked 6 when they meant to click 2.
Okay.
Dude, there's nothing redeemable about it. I don't understand how people... Now, here's the thing. After I watched it, I immediately Googled it because I was like, what are people saying about this? Apparently, people love it. And I genuinely do not understand because it is just fucking horrible. So, I don't even know how to start by talking about this.
Story synopsis is...
strange.
Yeah. So what's the shtick?
So here's the thing. I'm trying to like, I want to explain how I got to it, because if I just start the story, people are going to be like, well, yeah.
It does sound kind of...
Yeah, of course you did. I didn't know anything about it. I just looked up, I went on Reddit and looked up romance anime.
Oh,
and I just started going through everything. So I didn't really know what I was getting into before I started watching this. I probably still would have started it had I known a bit of the synopsis, but I would have been way more hesitant about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't for this podcast, I definitely would have stopped at like episode 3 or 4. it's similar to the Don't Tease Me show. I don't remember the name of it. I'm talking to you.
Oh, sorry. I was reading the synopsis.
Third
sorry,
host.
I was taking a special note that the main voice actress also happens to be the main vocal performer for the Op and Ed. But anyway, sorry. Throw that question back at your idiotic co-host.
What's the other show that we started? Don't Tease Me.
Oh,
whatever.
Miss Nagatoro. Oh, yeah, fucking Nagatoro. Bullshit.
Okay. They live in the same universe, essentially.
Okay.
So this show is about a girl named Yamada. She's entering high school, and her goal in life is to sleep with 100 men before she graduates.
But okay. High school?
Yeah. Yeah. See, now here's the thing. The idea of it, okay, that sounds funny. Horny girl wants to sleep with men.
No, I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it sounds fucking dumb, and it sounds like you would have 2 episodes of content and 18 episodes of filler.
Yeah. Well, okay. So here's the thing. So I think they were trying to be clever, because up to this point, a lot of ecchi type anime, you have horny dude and a hot girl, and then horny dude just stares at hot girl for 12 episodes.
Yeah.
So they tried to like flip it. You know, feminism. The girl's horny this time. Okay. Bro, fuck this goddamn piece of shit show. So she, okay, yeah, she's trying to sleep with 100 men, but she's like wants to do it perfect, especially for the first time. She wants to have everything. She wants to sleep with the right guy and do it in the right setting and the right mood and all this stuff. But she also like wants to sleep with somebody that isn't experienced, so she doesn't embarrass herself.
Right.
She wants to make a good name, but okay, whatever. Fucking stupid. She meets what's his name? Kosuda. He is I've talked about this before. Simp? I like it. No.
Okay.
I like characters that are like actual real people that I could like kind of ground myself in. And like he again is a nice, genuine, soft person that just wants to help people.
Okay.
He is a photographer, takes these like really meaningful pictures. He's a very straightforward, helpful guy. I don't remember exactly how they met. They met in like the library or something. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Of course. It was the library, the hot springs, the beach.
Yeah. But she latches onto him because he's the only one that hasn't tried to be with her. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So she was like, oh, this is the perfect like first one. Because she's the hot girl in school that everyone loves already. And he's the weird
dweeby,
kind of ugly dweeby guy that sits in the corner that no one really talks about. So she falls in love with him. This is already starting to sound a show that I would like, right?
Yeah, because no. it's lining up with Dress Up Darling and others.
Dress Up Darling and Hokkaido Gals. And,
yeah.
Except that the main girl has no redeeming qualities at all. She's just horny and she is also really mean. So like she...
The fuck?
She meets... Yeah, she meets Kosuda. She starts to fall in love with him, but that goes against her whole shtick, right?
She wants to sleep with 100 men.
She doesn't want to fall in love with one. She doesn't even want to fall in love with anybody. She just wants to sleep with 100 people, but she's like falling in love with him. So she bullies him instead of like just giving into it. But he's also like getting attention for the first time from a girl. So he's like, oh, well,
it's
I like
literally
you.
Miss Nagatoro.
Yeah.
It sounds like it.
And they have this constant back and forth where he is getting mixed signals because she clearly likes him and he tries to go forward, but then she gets mad at him and then she attacks him. And then he goes, oh, maybe I just read the signal wrong. So then he goes into like recluse mode and then she goes, well, why doesn't he like me? But I,
you know,
and this, it happens for so long. And then you meet other characters and it turns out that Kosuda had like a childhood friend and childhood friend really likes Kosuda. But he's kind of a dunce, and so he doesn't realize that childhood friend likes him. And then now Yamada gets jealous because there's a woman in his life, but she also doesn't want to acknowledge that she likes him, and then weird shit happens. And then another girl enters the school, and she's the new hot girl that's way hotter than Yamada.
So now it's a harem?
And now she's like, but it's also a harem for a character that is a side character, not the main character. You see what I'm saying? And so
this sounds really disorganized.
The new girl is now fighting Yamada because she wants to be the new popular girl that sleeps with everybody. And then they just start fighting each other. And she's like, well, who are you interested in? And she's like, oh, I'm interested in this fucking dumbass. Hold on, I'm not done.
Yeah.
And then I'm interested in this fucking dumbass over here. So now all of a sudden, people that aren't attracted to Kosuda are now like trying to fight over him. And then you find out the new hot girl is like rich. And so they go over to this mansion. And she keeps trying to sleep with Kosuda because she finally got to the point where she realizes like, well, maybe I do love him. I'm going to actually do it. By the way, nothing happens. Nobody gets together in any capacity in the entire show.
Love that.
Yeah.
Worthwhile.
I did find out this is the one redeeming factor that the show has.
Sure.
If you sit there and you're watching it on your phone and you know how it has like the 10 plus second. Okay. If you sit there and you steadily 1, 2, 3, 4, just keep clicking the 10 second forward, you actually get the full story. And you cut out you can watch the whole series in like 2 hours instead of 6, which is nice. So if you feel like wasting 2 hours of your life, you could just sit there and hit the fast forward button over and over again. You'll get the same story.
Hey guys, welcome to You Use Spicy Streamer Tips. Today I'm going to tell you how to watch really shitty anime really fast.
Yeah.
All you got to do is turn your phone sideways. Now what you're going to want to do is take your finger and you're going to tap the right side of that screen.
Yeah.
And if you tap it at just the right pace, don't go too fast. You don't want to get all hot
take
and sweaty.
Take breaks every now and then if you want to, you know, see a little something. But then, yeah, you just keep skipping forward.
Yeah,
but, the problem that I have is that if they started out with, I want to sleep with 100 guys, and then she starts to fall in love, and let's say around like episode 3 or 4 or something, she starts to change her mind and actually has some growth to it, it might not have been such a bad show. But the thing is, neither character has any compatibility at all. It's just we're forcing them to go together even though their characters do not align in any way.
Story convenience.
It's so bad. And like when you meet childhood friend, those two actually do have chemistry together and they're great.
Now, what prompted you to grind this out? You didn't drop it? I dropped Nagatoro.
The podcast.
I could not.
That's what I've said that 4 times this episode.
What a motivating factor. No, like I understand the podcast, but like that was it. The only motivation was to shit on it. Okay, I mean, fair enough. Mm-hmm. Hey, I dropped Miss Nagatoro because it stopped being funny after one episode.
And I went up to you when we were watching that and I was like, I think we've seen the show.
we've seen everything there is to see.
This was the same way. And again, I would have stopped it at like episode 3 or 4, but it was so bad that I was like, I want to talk about this, but I want to finish it before I talk about it. Just in case gets better or something. No, it's bad. It's just, it's two characters that don't have compatibility. They tried to make the girl horny and it didn't work. And that's kind of the end of it.
Oof, yeah.
It's so fucking bad.
Now that was something you think is fucking dumb, but how about something we both think is fucking dumb on our favorite section? Things we think are fucking dumb.
They're fucking dumb.
So the thing we want to kind of shit on this week, door-to-door salesman. And if you are one and you're listening to this,
get a new job.
For the sake of the neighborhood, please do. We'll probably talk about this more next week because we're already running out of time and trying to like get on to the meat and potatoes of the whole fucking thing. We have decided that we are going to keep delicious hentai manga on hand because those are the pamphlets of our religion. And that way when door-to-door salespeople and or proselytizers decide
to mostly the proselytizers.
Yeah,
we'll give them that. Them. If it's just door-to-door salesmen,
I'm not giving them shit.
No.
They'll be lucky to see my face.
I want to build that box with their paper shredder that's
please insert business cards or whatever. Yeah. And please deposit. Better than a Banksy painting. Anyway, we are going to take a very, 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 very short break, and then we will be back for Serious Shit. Be right back. Well, we didn't have things to say. You know, I thought this was going to be a filler episode day, and then we're just like, nah, we're going to fucking run with it, and we're going to have a long-ass episode. So here we are.
I could talk about Yamada's first sabor if you want.
I think we've, just like the actual anime itself, I think we've heard enough of fucking Yamada's first time. So onto the section we call Serious Shit. As always, if you're new to the podcast, this is the section where we like to give our opinions on real life, cultural, and news issues facing Japan. Do be advised, these are our own opinions, and trigger warning served in advance. Sometimes we're going to get a little spicy. Not in the same way we talk about anime. This is real stuff, so things can get a lot more harsh. So if you were here just for the memes, now is the time to tune out. We'll see you next week. And if you're here for the discussion, well, welcome. Also, incentive, if you do not currently follow us on Twitch, please do consider doing so. twitch.tv/Shinigami_love_apples. And if you go to that Twitch channel and follow us there, you can join us for a discussion on these topics after the episode records every Saturday. But onto the actual topics this week. Kind of the first topic, both of the topics are related. And today's, both of our topics are about Japanese kids that became superstars, both athletics, I guess, technically. One's more like athletic sports, and the other's racing sports. But they both became sports superstars. And I wanted to talk about kind of the way that even came to be and the way it differs from the way it happens in the West, out here in the U.S. specifically. So the first article we have is Sporting Geniuses Are Made, Not Born, How to Be an All-Star Sports Parent. Now, this is about Shohei Ohtani, who was the Japanese baseball player who just signed a record contract with Dodgers, question mark? I don't remember what team.
I don't know.
He signed on with I don't follow sports a whole lot. Neither of us.
It's
really
kind of funny.
Do.
We've talked about sports a couple of times and neither of us. Watch.
And neither of us really. Yeah. But it's interesting because for Japan, baseball is as integral to their culture as American football is to us.
Or even baseball, really.
Yeah. Well, I think baseball for them is even more important than it is for us. Yeah. I think,
well, for today, but baseball was always a huge American thing. It's kind of fallen off recently, but. Yeah,
but
I love baseball. That's one thing that I would love, like, if I end up in Japan or Korea.
Yeah,
like,
find a good Japanese team to watch.
I would, I would love to follow
but
that more.
This whole article, I can summarize it really easily, and that is Shohei's parents, Toru, his father, and his mother, Kayoko, they both chose... before I say that, I'm going to provide some context. Japanese parents, as far as my... understanding goes, and feel free to correct me if you're from Japan and you think I'm incorrect about this or no, I'm incorrect. But from what I've read, studied, and learned about Japan, Japanese parents are very pragmatic. If you are a child and you're drawing stick figures and you're going to put that on a piece of construction paper and give it to your mom or dad and you hope they're going to put it up on the fridge, right? The quintessential cheesy stereotype of a parent being proud of their child's work. In Japan, that sort of, what's the word? Not condescension. what is it called? Patronization. That sort of patronizing behavior in Japan cuts off at a much younger age. In Japan, children kind of stop receiving free praise about the time they start getting into middle school, maybe a little earlier.
Yeah.
So by the time they're double digits, you know, preteens, their parents are no longer... worshiping the ground they walk on. They're kind of preparing them for the real world.
Yeah.
And this is partly because Japan's society is so corporate and so structured that there isn't a lot of room for individualistic, strong overachievers. There isn't a lot of room there for that, like there is in the US or in Britain or in other Western nations. but the Shohei Ohtani's parents took a different route. They chose to support him from an early day, even though they knew there was a high probability he was never going to make it. Which, of course, hindsight being what it is, now they're sitting there going, wow, we were kind of great parents. And, of course, Shohei Ohtani's probably very grateful. But you have to understand how unusual this is for Japanese parents to look at a child, no matter how skilled they are. And that's the thing is, Japanese children aren't underachievers because of the sort of understanding that you will please your parents and you will bring, I hate saying honor because God, that fucking, it becomes a meme.
Yeah.
But bring pride to your family by being good at achieving something. Most Japanese kids are already overachieving anyway, by certainly by American standards, they're overachieving. So when we say, oh, this Japanese kid's great at baseball. Kids over here in the States can barely fucking swing a bat at that age. And, you know, in again, he started very, very young. You know, he started, I think they mentioned, I guess they didn't mention his age directly, but you know, he started as an elementary school student and, you know, here you go. Despite the low odds of making as a professional athlete, a poll focused on soccer training school specifically, but polled of many parents in different sports, said that one in four Japanese parents wants their child to be a pro athlete, even though they understand that their odds of making it are completely catastrophic. And it even says here that it's a mix of nature and nurture to make an elite athlete, but the biggest factors are usually genetics and socioeconomic status. And yeah, that's true. Like in the US specifically, if you're going to be a sports celebrity, you have to be a complete massive standout, and not just a standout. You have to be willing to accept the fact that you might not be good at anything else as a trade for being good at that one thing you want to be good at. Oh, you want to be a world famous singer? I hope you don't ever plan on doing any other career because you're going to have to really put your nose to the grindstone. And in America, we kind of, because we're individualists, and we kind of like that risk and that gamble.
Yeah.
It's more frequent for kids in America to be told, fuck it. Yeah, you want to be a streamer? Knock yourself out, kiddo.
Well,
or, hey, you want to be an artist? Go ahead.
I would say not quite.
Well, to a degree.
I've never met anybody who had a dream as a child and their parents allowed that.
Oh,
it's always, at least in my circle, it's always been, you will be what I failed to be. And they force the kid, or the parent will force the kid to do something whether they want to or not.
Well,
right? Like everybody that I was around, including myself, was sports. Mm-hmm. I didn't become the professional athlete, so now I had a kid, and you are going to become the athlete, and I will do everything to make sure that you do that, whether you want to or not, right? I never wanted to do that. I wanted to sit inside and like tear electronics apart and paint and have tea parties. And my parents were like, no, you're going to join the football team and you're going to be the best at it. And it's like, I don't want
to. Well, it's living vicariously through your child. It's living your dreams vicariously through your child's.
I don't think I've ever met anybody that said, I want to be a painter, unless you're in like a very liberal household where they are more open to things. Right,
which is where I was going was.
I grew up conservative. So like everything was I had to learn to be the best builder, the best football player, and you know, this, that, and the other. I was allowed to casually pursue.
But you weren't supported. Like no one was making an investment to turn you into whatever you wanted to be.
My parents, to be fair to my parents, they weren't super strict as a lot of my friends and like acquaintances were.
Yeah.
It was they would be happy as long as I had a good paying job, but it was like their view of a good paying job was sports and construction work and stuff like that, not necessarily painting and music.
Yeah. Well, and Japan struggles with this even more than we do, because again, if you look at the societal factors, Japan is a collectivist society focused on the good of the group over the individual. So if you're an overachieving individual, no one really cares.
Yeah.
You standing up on your desk and saying, I'm going to be the next great Babe Ruth, I'm going to be the next great baseball player, you're going to get told to sit the fuck down and shut the fuck up because you are harming the group's progress by trying to stand out. At the same token, it's risk avoidance. The Japanese culture is extremely, in fact, Japan is one of, I think, the top three cultures for risk avoidance.
Yeah.
They loathe the unknown more than almost any other culture on the planet. They hate that sense of, oh, what does the future hold for me? They want to know in advance. And I'm very, very much a high uncertainty avoidance person. I don't like gambles. We were just talking about that with the job opportunity thing. But for Japanese parents to look at a child who did have the talent, see, that's where I think the line gets drawn. In the States, if a child has the talent, usually it'll click at some point and the parent will go, maybe I can capitalize on this. And actually, sadly, that usually becomes the problem where you get the toddlers and tiaras syndrome of, my kid's good at singing. And now, instead of letting that child pursue it at their own pace and discover a love for it, you've decided you were going to hammer them. You will have fucking lessons. You will have lessons five times a day. You're going to have only the best vocal coaching. And it almost like oversteps. Japan doesn't do that. Japan goes, wow, you're really talented at baseball. That's cool. Anyway, we're going to move on to the next thing. Even if you have the talent, Japanese parents, you should just shut it down and go, no. And outside of a few, sadly, stereotypical cliches, usually in the music and the arts, unless you are recognized early as being an international standout, which Ohtani was not, according to the article. He was a good baseball player as a kid, but at no point did someone go, wow, fucking miracle worker over here. No, that's not how his upbringing was. And Ohtani's parents said that the main thing they did is when they realized that he was passionate and talented together, they decided that they were just going to dedicate their time to supporting the efforts, even if it meant setting him up for a potential failure in adulthood. That's a strange gamble for a Japanese set of parents to make. To be willing to, because think about the consequences for the parents. If a Japanese child fails, it goes immediately to parents. That's just how Japan is. That sense of responsibility is a family encompassing thing. It's not like if Ohtani graduated high school and could not get a scholarship into college or could not get onto a major sports team, it's not like he's going to take the fall for that. That's going to go right. They're going to go right to his parents and go, why didn't you stop him sooner? Why didn't you make him into a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer or any other practical career, a salary man? Why didn't you do this? And his parents would have been grilled, but now they're being lauded, which is oddly hypocritical of the Japanese mindset to be like, oh, what great, incredible parenting for you to recognize his talent. And the parents, especially one of the quotes in here, is from his mother, Kyoko, where she kind of admits, she's like, the majority of homes, she said that like I visited, she said you had signs everywhere that there was a child in the house, you know, artwork, schoolwork, photos, rocks, acorns, whatever. But at no point did she feel like her child was going to be a superstar.
Yeah.
So she knew, she had this gut feeling, it was all going to be bullshit, and it was going to reach adulthood, and that was going to be the end of it, and man, we really probably should have done something else, but she went with it anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I feel about it. On one hand, this is the American in me speaking, or like the Western culture part of me speaking.
Yeah.
That's really cool, because that's a personal investment as a loving parent to go, wow, my child really wants to do this. Mm-hmm. I guess I shouldn't force them to do anything, but if this is what they want, I'll give it to them. Mm-hmm. And I applaud them. At the same token, you really were gambling. Like you were, what was your backup plan? Were you just going to hold up your hands at 18 years old and go, well, he turned out to be dog shit. So, don't yell at me. Like,
I don't know.
It's just really cool. And it leads us straight into our second article of almost an identical situation, but even more impressive because it's a female. And that is Japanese racing prodigy Juju Noda takes a big step into super formulas. So she is now one league, if you will, away from the fastest Formula One racing series in the world. Literally F1. Mm-hmm. And she is in the exact same situation.
Yeah.
Where her parents looked at her, specifically her father, looked at her talent and went, okay, Japanese woman or Japanese girl, into cars as a high schooler. Okay. I know she's going to go be a salary woman. Yay. Yeah. Or she's going to be a wonderful wife for some great salary man working for Suntory or some other company. I don't know. He didn't do that. He looked at her and went, man, chicks into cars. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to take my daughter to the circuit at his own cost, by the way.
Yeah.
He by the way, he's a low level salary man.
Mm.
And he's just like, oh, I'm going to shell out my personal cash for my teenage daughter to experience the joys of racing. Again, I would love to pick his brain at what point he thought this was actually going to work.
Yeah.
Swimming uphill against the Japanese attitude of there's no way a girl of all things, especially. Mm-hmm. Like if it had been Otani in this situation, maybe people would have gone,
Right.
Guy racer, of course, no problem. Yeah, he could be a race car driver.
Yeah.
But for a girl, especially, to make that jump and then achieve it. Wow, man, as a parent, that's cool.
That is really cool.
And we had talked about 2 weeks ago that societally Japan is getting a little more, how would you even say it? I'm trying to find a non-offensive way to say it. Open? That's lame. Japan is embracing the potential of people better year on year. And I think some of that is because Japan is in such an economically disastrous position that people are starting to have to think outside of the box and go, oh, I wonder if I can find talent elsewhere. I wonder if I can find women who are just as good, if not better, at their jobs than men. I wonder if I can find kids who are the future talent that would have been put down otherwise. And I think Japan's starting to find that collectivism's amazing because it buys you peace and it buys you unity. Mm-hmm. But when you're looking for the next great Einstein, the next great Babe Ruth, the next great anybody, you're not going to find them in a collectivist pool. You're going to have to find an individual stand up.
Well, you do have like more recent stuff, especially with the internet and everything. You do see more Western influence, whether you want to or not. Just
that,
kind of how
it's true.
Things work. So they will be influenced somewhat in that way. But you can also just kind of like look even within Japan. Like if you look at, I've already forgot his name.
Otani.
Yeah, he was just a little baseball player that maybe didn't really get to go anything until you find out that he just signed a $700 million contract. And you start to think, oh, maybe I should let my kid do something like stuff like this. Or you look at the success of Sony or Nintendo or Honda or any number of large, large companies in Japan that were started by a guy or Miyazaki, and how he took little kids cartoons and turn into this mega corporation that took over the world. Okay. Yeah. Maybe you should take the things that used to be silly and start to like really
reconsider it.
Like maybe they aren't silly in today's climate.
And I think what's cool about it too, is like the Japanese strength is the fact that they so wholly dedicate themselves to whatever they're working on. That that drive and that work ethic is very uniquely Japanese. Like, there are not many societies whose attitude towards work, even work they dislike, is I will give it my 110% by default. And sure, some of that's cultural. I doubt babies are born in Japan with this weird circuit in their back of their head that says, I work hard, yay!
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case. But the culture overarching is they're overachievers. They're natural high achievers. So to finally be recognizing that overachieving plus talent means game breakers and incredible opportunity. I'm glad they're finally cluing into that.
Yeah.
I mean, again, Japan is unfortunately 30 to 40 years behind on understanding that that's an okay thing. Here we are. We're like, look at YouTube, right? America has already embraced the fact that a YouTube creator can be a full-time job, a celebrity status on top of that. Just ask Mr. Beast. You can have someone like that, and that's totally legitimate, but there aren't Japanese creators like that because in Japan's eyes, it's not legitimate.
Yet. Right. Yeah.
But maybe, just maybe, if this trend continues, and I wonder how much of this is driven by Japanese millennials. Now, Otani's parents, to be fair, are Gen X.
Yeah.
But they're not Japanese elders. And I think the Japanese elder population is where most of Japan's conservatism comes from. I think Japan is closeted liberal. I really do. Japan's behavior is extremely liberal. They have great healthcare, a great healthcare system. They have a great mass transit system. They've got a great general approach to personal value.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, they refuse to adopt these attitudes publicly. And I really do feel like the elder population is because being the driving conservatives and because age being the main sort of metric for where you get respect, that you just have older people shitting on all the younger ones going, I don't care if that's what the rest of the world is doing. I'm 80 years old and you'll listen to me. God damn it.
Yeah.
and now that that generation is both, this sounds really harsh. I apologize if you're Japanese. I don't mean this in a harsh way, but like now that that generation is dying off and sort of those ideals are passing with the people who carry them, I think we're seeing Gen X and millennial and eventually Gen Z parents sort of, well, I'm not under pressure to put them down anymore.
Yeah.
I can support my child in baseball or the arts or a girl in racing and not be cultural pariahs for everyone to laugh at.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm really hoping this trend continues. I know we said that again, two episodes ago, but I just couldn't resist pointing it out again. Cause it's just weirdly, I don't know, optimistic. And it's weird because we've had a hard time pulling news. Serious shit has been oddly optimistic the past several weeks outside of the video game shit we had last week.
Yeah.
And it's been really, enjoyable. So hopefully it continues, like I said. Anyway, we ran a little long, but we had so much. Again, I was like, this will be a filler episode. Surely we won't have anything important to say. And then we had plenty to say because we had things to rant about.
It's true.
It's like par for the course for us.
Yeah. I get to start talking about Yamada if you want to just make it extra long.
No, we'll have a post-recording bonus content where you can listen to Yu rant even more about Kobo or Boho or whatever the fuck.
Hobo. Bigat? No. There's no O's.
It's what was the abbreviation on the cover art? Hold on.
Bigata HK.
Bigata HK. But I swear. No, hold on. I'm going to go back to that. I swear it had.
No, it doesn't say Boho.
Oh, it looks like it does. It looks it's like just Boho circles. In the art.
Yeah.
Okay, well, anyway. Anyway, thank you for listening to this very rambly but very fun filler episode. We promise next week we'll have a recap. We'll go over the last 9 episodes, but a very shitty copypasta order, just like Solo Leveling. Oh, get wrecked, nerds. Anyway, if you enjoyed this episode, please definitely consider following us on Twitch or any of our social media, including Threads, which is where we live most of the time. Hopefully, we'll get the rest of our social media churning out content very soon. As always, this was the Shinigami Love Apples podcast, episode 9. I was Shinigami Ping Ping. That was Shinigami Yu Yu, and we will see you next week.